Blog Talk Radio.
400 years have passed. Once again, it is time for a new warrior to emerge from the darkness. Throughout time, the battlefields have changed, but the prize has always remained the same: the human soul.
You need to get it. Pete don't wanna love you the right way. He ain't gonna. It ain't where he's at. It's where he wanna be. Yeah.
Broadcasting live from NYC. What's good, people? It's your man, Estat. It is our duty. It is our responsibility as not just people of color, but as citizens of humanity. The objective is to inspire proactive people to productive activities. What's good, people? It's your man, S-Dot. My commitment, first and foremost, is to the restoration and rebuilding of the black family. Black on black love. What's good, people? It's your man, S-Dot. This is why it's important that we've got to get out of the window and start looking in the mirror. Black love is not a passive response. It is a declaration of warfare against those who desire to control and manipulate black men and black women, and deprive them over their stewardship over the black family. What's good, people? It's your man, Estat. I remind you that this show is for constructive purposes only.
Why do the marriage and relationship experiences of African Americans differ so markedly from those of other Americans? How are we to explain the high levels of tension and conflict between black men and women? What are the root causes of their turbulent relationships? In reflecting on her own experiences, the public school administrator points a finger squarely at herself and other black women. After asking over and over again, "What's wrong with these men?" it finally dawned on me to ask the question, "What's wrong with us women?" What I've found, and what many of these women have yet to discover, is that the skills that make one successful in the church, community, or workplace are not the skills that make one successful in a relationship. Being acknowledged as the head of the household is an especially important thing for many black men, since their manhood is so often actively challenged everywhere else. Many modern women are so independent, so self-sufficient, so committed to the cause, to the church, to career, or their narrow concepts of same, that their entire personalities project an "I don't need a man" message. So they end up without one. An interested man may be attracted, but he soon discovers that this sister makes very little space for him in her life. Going to graduate school is a good goal and an option that previous generations of blacks have not had. But sometimes the achieving woman will place her boyfriend so low on her list of priorities that his interest wanes. Between work, school, and homework, she's seldom there for him. For the preliminaries that might develop a commitment to a woman, she's too busy to prepare him a home-cooked meal or to be a listening ear for his concerns because she is so occupied with her own.
When I'm alone in my room, sometimes I stare at the wall, and in the back of my mind, I hear my conscience call, telling me I need a girl who's as sweet as a dove. For the first time in my life, I see I need love. There I was, giggling about the games that I had played with many hearts, and I'm not saying no names. Then the thought occurred, teardrops made my eyes blur, 'cause I said to myself, look what you've done to her. I can feel it inside, I can't explain how it feels. All I know is that I'm never dishing up the raw deal, playing make-believe, pretending that I'm true, holding in my laugh as I say that I love you, saying I'm more, kissing you on the ear, whispering I love you and I'll always be here. Although I often reminisce, I can't believe that I found a desire for true love floating around inside my soul, because my soul is cold. One half of me deserves to be this way till I'm old, but the other half needs affection and joy, and the warmth that is created by a girl and a boy. I need love.
Welcome to the Black Love Experience, hosted by inspiring author S. Dot, exclusively presented by the S. Dot File.
What's good, people? It's your man S. Dot, back for another exciting episode of the Black Love Experience. Thank each and every one of you for joining us this evening on this Friday, January 26, 2013. Tonight, we're going to be talking to an inspiring author who has written a phenomenal book that many of you absolutely must read. I know a lot of folks who connect with me online and offline talk to me about the Black Love Experience and their difficulties in finding and sustaining Black Love. So this show is definitely a must-hear and a must-share. For those of you who are listening live online, I thank each and every one of you for joining us. For those of you who are in the chat room, thank each and every one of you who are on the chat room. Those of you who are on the switchboard already, thank each and every one of you who are on the switchboard. And, of course, our archive listeners, we thank each and every one of you because we appreciate you. As you know, this show is phenomenally popular on the archive. We average an average of about 1,200 downloads per episode. Some episodes have averaged a download of about 5,000, depending on a particular guest. So once again, thank each and every one of you who join us on the show on a continuous basis. So tonight's guest is going to be joining us in a moment, but as you guys all know, I like to set the mood for the show. I like to welcome in and usher in a spirit of Black love. So for those of you who may be clicking by for the first time, I want to caution you and remind you that this show is not for everyone. I want to warn you that this show contains inspiring words, motivational music, and empowering solutions. It is a healing platform for revealing emotional, cultural, and spiritual scars and unearthing long, unspoken hurts. This show is not for everyone, and it may not be for you. So you are strongly cautioned from listening if you are afraid to put down your psychological or cultural baggage, or if you're unprepared to actually begin the process of deliverance from brokenness and bitterness. That being said, we all want to come together in Black love. We'll be back in a minute.
Yeah, I'm ready. I'm so Content of this show, there will be no calls taken during the monologue segment of the show. In order to allow you, the listener, to fully benefit from the message being shared without interruption, callers will be invited into the conversation at the conclusion of the monologue segment. In the meantime, you are strongly encouraged to join the chat room discussion and post your questions, which will be addressed later in the show. Thank you for clicking by to connect and reflect on Love and Life with F-Stop and Friends.
Broadcasting live from NYC. What's good, people? It's your man, F-Stop. It is our duty, it is our responsibility as not just people of color, but as citizens of humanity. The objective is to inspire proactive people to productive activities.
F-Stop has a get-it-done mindset when it comes to achieving. Sharing breakthrough strategies and overcoming solutions for everyday people, he is a communicator of change. S.Dot's most impressive credential is that he keeps it 100 and doesn't water down the whole truth and nothing but the truth. It is this refreshing forthrightness that enables him to speak with a right now relevance to people from many walks of life. His can't stop, don't stop, won't stop attitude is infectious to those who have experienced this inspiring author, motivational speaker, and empowerment coach that is committed to helping those most in need succeed in love and life.
Black love, family, black love, black love, black love. Black love to my brothers, black love to my sisters, black love to the children, black love, family. Welcome to the Black Love Experience. I am your host, S.Dot. It is Friday, January 26, 2013. Once again, we are excited that each and every one of you are joining us this evening. And for tonight's show, we have an exciting new author who has just released an ebook, How to Be a Good Black Woman to a Strong Black Man. That's right, you heard me. I hear a lot of folks complaining, sending out tweets, updating their Facebook status about their lack of black love in their relationships. So tonight, she is a wife, mother, daughter, and sister, dedicated to the empowerment of the black family, who has contributed unapologetically her bold voice to the message to the Black Fam radio show on Tuesdays from 7 to 9 p.m. on the War on the Horizon Network, as well as written several publications focusing on community conscious raising topics to equip, encourage, and educate those ready to go to the next level in love and life. An advocate of personal responsibility, growth, and development, She is currently working on her next book entitled Conscience Entertainment. Tonight she joins us to share her lived and learned insights and wisdom and debuts her first book, God's Gift, How to Be a Good Black Woman to a Strong Black Man. We have, ladies and gentlemen, joining us on the line, Sister Angela Freeman, a.k.a. Lady Shabazz. Black love. And good evening, Sister Angela. Are you there with us?
Yes, peace. How are you?
I'm very well, Sister. I thank you for joining us on the Black Love Experience.
Oh, thank you for the invitation. I appreciate it.
Absolutely, absolutely. So let's just kick right off, because a lot of folks have been texting me, emailing me throughout the day about your particular book. Tell the folks a little bit about yourself and how it is that you come to do this work that you do.
Well, my life is fairly simple. I'm a homemaker. I have a wonderful husband, two beautiful stepdaughters. I have, as you mentioned, a radio program on War on the Horizon Radio. And I've done freelance work from time to time, but I never actually considered writing a book. People kept on asking me for recommendations about homemaking and relationships and just improving their life, basically. And I noticed that there was never just one book that I could give them. I always had to give them a long list of 7 or 8 different books. Most of them were not really from a Black perspective, and our culture has a lot of special needs that we need to address specifically that are not going to be addressed by anybody outside of the culture. So I decided to do a book that would have most of your relevant information in one place that will give you common sense advice. Nothing spooky, nothing, out there or any of that. Just common sense advice that you can actually start putting to use from day one to see your relationship and yourself just improve.
And I think that is very much needed and is definitely very much appreciated. So tell us a little bit about the writing process, your creative process. How did that come about?
I'll tell you what, this book actually came very, very easily for me. I was very surprised. Somebody had mentioned, as I was saying, a book recommendation, and I was giving them this long list, and they said, why don't you just write a book? And so I luckily have a lot of talented people around me, and I called one of my good friends, the Irritated Genie of Southeast, who has a book, War on the Horizon, and I was asking him about the writing process, and he was telling me it really wasn't as difficult as I thought. So I said, well, I'll try to write a book, and I'll send it to you when it's done, and you can tell me what you think. And I ended up writing the book in like a week and a half. I just didn't do anything but that. I sat down with my laptop from the time I got up to the time I went to sleep and put it down every piece of information that I would have wanted 10 or 15 years ago, and I almost just kind of wrote it like I was talking to a younger sister or a little cousin, what they could use or do now that will help improve their condition. There's a lot of things that women are not taught anymore. Our mothers either don't know or just have not instilled things in us, so it's very hard to grow up knowing what to do when it's never been demonstrated for us and never taught.
I would definitely agree, and from a brother perspective, I know that there are lots of things that a lot of brothers today aren't learning that they should be learning because the father figures aren't teaching them, or the father figures are really lax in their duty in passing on very much critical information to lots of brothers. So when you look at the plight of today's dating and mating ritual, which is taking place between today's Black man and Black woman, what do you see?
I see complete madness and dysfunction. We have reached a point where we don't want to work together at this point. We're in constant competition with each other. We look at each other a lot of times almost as enemies. There's no way that you can build a future like that, and that's why our communities are in shambles. You can't have a strong community if that community is not built of strong families. We have to get that together. Luckily, I have a pretty balanced opinion. Of course, I'm a woman, so I see things from a woman's perspective, but I was raised around mostly men. I have two brothers, a father. I was the only female, so I kind of got a little bit of both perspectives. I listen to men when they talk, and I don't always agree with them, but I kind of keep mental notes. And so I learned a little bit how to deal with them and how to live in peace with them, and almost be an ambassador for them a little bit so I can explain to women where men are coming from in a way that some people may not be able to if they haven't had their ears open to be able to listen to what the brothers are trying to tell us.
Well, now, in today's cultural climate, thinking specifically of today's westernized black woman, many of today's westernized black women are coming from a perspective in which the information that they're bombarded with on a day-to-day basis from the radio, from the television, from print media, even online, most of that information seems to be adverse to black family. So how is it that you go about doing the work that you do, knowing that there are so many forces and resources that are adverse to promoting black families?
You know, I do it because it needs to be done and because I was raised the same way that everybody else was for the most part. I fell victim to it, too. I thought that as a woman, you had to be a feminist. You should not have to depend on a man. A lot of the same attitudes that a lot of sisters today have. And when I got knowledge of self, I started really looking at things and seeing that we are not each other's enemies. Number one, we hurt black men as much as they hurt us. It's a two-way street. It doesn't go one way. So we can push all of that blame aside and know that we both play a role in it. But where is our real enemy? Our real enemy is the one that brought us over here and put us at odds with each other and used our household, dividing our household to get us to fight each other. That's why they are still in control and we are not. We have to heal that. We have to stop fighting with each other, realize that we're not the enemy, start focusing on who the enemy is and work together to get out of our condition.
Now, that's interesting that you say that because when we look at popular entertainment or what's called popular entertainment, these days, I'm not sure if you're familiar, but one of the most popular shows that's on television right now is a show by the name of Scandal, that stars Kerry Washington. And in this show, she plays a fixer, if you will, an individual who cleans up the messes of people who are involved in public scandal in Washington, D.C. And in this particular show, she is in the role of having an affair with the president of the United States, who happens to be a white male. Many folks, myself included, have likened this to Sally Hemings 2.0 to see, and in fact, even on a recent episode, the character that she plays, Olivia Pope, made the analogy that she felt like she was Sally Hemings, to which the white male character accused her of playing the race card. Now, looking at the fact that there's a show like this, which is in prime time, which is very influential, and so many of our sisters these days are being impacted by viewing shows of this nature, how is it that you think that you could come out with a book talking about how to be a good black woman to a strong black man when it seems that so many black women don't want anything to do with any black man, whether he's strong or otherwise?
Well, one of my favorite sayings has become only the willing. This book is not for everybody, and I am not going to try to convert anybody that is not willing to improve themselves. If what you're doing works for you, then you just keep right on doing it and don't worry about it. But once we reach a level of maturity where we recognize the genocide that's going on and we want to do something about it, well, then it's time to reach out and look for real solutions. those solutions aren't going to be thinking like a man. They're not going to be playing games or, you know, dressing seductively or any of the many tricks that we try. We need something that's really, really going to work. Personally, I stopped watching television for that very reason, because all of the things that were being fed to me were completely negative. And I didn't want that to go into my mind. So I just cut out TV. Now I'll watch documentaries or something like that. I know that not everybody's going to do it. But when you know that you're watching something as treasonous as what you just described, you should kind of step back a minute, because the people that make these programs are very wise, and they know how to put subliminals in there, and they know how to influence our thoughts. Years ago, when we saw black women on TV acting outrageously, we laughed at it. We thought it was funny because black women didn't really act like that. It was just such a stretch to even say that it was funny. But now we see it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Now black women really are acting crazy, obnoxious, just like they had on TV back in the 90s. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy, and I don't want any parts of that.
I definitely know what you mean. Recently, about 2-3 weeks ago, I actually called a black female friend of mine, and her son picked up her cell phone and said, "My mom can't come to the phone right now. She said she'll call you tomorrow. She's watching her show." And I was like, "Well, what do you mean, what show?" And he was like, "She's busy in there lusting over some white guy." And I was like, "Are you talking about Scandal?" And he was like, "Yes." And I thought about the impact that must have on the countless young black males who are growing up in households, whether those are two-parent households or single-parent households, and they are watching their black mothers, maternal figures, and even their sisters and their aunts, who are every week tuning in to a show in which the central character is engaged in a relationship with a white male character, and an adulterous relationship as that. And I thought about it, and I actually posted, you know, my disdain for this sort of behavior. And there were probably about 110 comments to this particular disdain, particularly from black women who were defending this sort of behavior. How do you combat this or respond to this sort of behavior when there are so many black women who are endorsing a black woman behaving as a public whore?
Well, one of the things that you'll hear me constantly repeating is that we have to mature. One part of why black women love those kind of things is because we've been hurt for so long watching black men constantly date interracially, especially once they get money. It's, you know, stereotypical. You leave the black woman that was with you the whole time and go get another woman. So we had to deal with that for a long time. So now, as a defense mechanism, we say, well, if black men can do it, we can do it too. Instead of just worrying about ourselves and doing what we need to do to help strengthen our community, we're joining in that genocide. There are some black women who dislike black men so much that I think that they would love to see a lot of them taken off the planet. It's extreme, but I've met black women who are just that hurt. And it's that kind of pain that we have to deal with and heal from so that we can start being productive. Because as long as you're lusting after somebody who has proven themselves to be your enemy worldwide for the last at least 500 years, if not longer, we're going to have problems.
And I agree with that. I felt it was quite disheartening. I'm an advocate of black love. I only want to talk about black people loving black people, black men loving black women, loving black children. And I get a lot of flack for that. You know, I oftentimes get folks who are engaged in all sorts of other behaviors say to me, "Well, what about interracial, so-called interracial, or what about same gender pairings and all these other situations?" And when I was less focused, I would respond emotionally. But now my response is just, what's wrong with a black man loving a black woman and them loving black children? And to that, I get all sorts of hemming and hawing from black folks. What has been your experience when you go about doing the work that you're doing and talking about trying to save and build constructive black relationships? What has been your response, and what has been some of your experiences?
It's been pretty much the same. We want freedom to do what we want, whether it's productive or not. And again, like I said, it's a defense mechanism. We're being told that there are no good men. The good men are taken, and the rest are, you know, there's some in jail, there's some that are homosexual, the rest aren't worth anything. And a lot of times we don't love ourselves either. A lot of times we get involved in interracial relationships because maybe we don't like our own hair or our own skin. Maybe we've been teased. And so we want to dilute it a little bit so that our children won't endure the same things that we've endured. Regardless of what the reason is, it's dysfunctional. It's not going to help the black race at all. And it's genocide. If we continue to go in that manner, there will be no black people left. I know people think that that's extreme, but that has actually happened in other cultures. If you look at the Aborigines in Australia, the goal of white people was to breed them out, and they did a pretty good job of it. In some parts of the South Pacific, they were successful in doing that. They took it forcibly for years, and now we're volunteering for it. At War on the Horizon, we call it voluntary rape. It's not something that we should be engaging in. Neither is homosexuality. It's not okay.
Now, you know, I want to delve a bit into the book. Looking at, I see that you have 13 chapters in the book, and the first chapter was The Life of a Black Man. Tell us a little bit about that chapter, and if you can, share a little.
Sure. The Life of a Black Man basically started out telling the story of a black man who just really had a rough day. He did not have a good day at all. And it just kind of gave us an insight to what black men go through every day, because sometimes as black women, we really don't think about that. A lot of times, you know, we go to work, we might have to put up with a little bit, but it's nothing near most black men, especially a blue-collar black man, how he's perceived throughout the day by everybody that he comes into contact with. Be they black, white, I mean, a lot of times black men just can't get any love. So I started off by telling that story, and then I basically just gave an overview or a preview of the book. I'll read an excerpt from it, speaking about my views on feminism. It says, "There's nothing feminine about feminism. Feminism is just a destructive way of competing with men instead of truly valuing the female principle by cooperating. Our unique nature is powerful and no less important than the masculine principle. Our lives become much more balanced when we are in tune with our nature instead of challenging our complements, which are black men, for their position. When we return to being the goddesses that we were born to be, our communities will improve overnight. We need the creativity, nurturing, and feminine strength that can only come from black women. The majority of today's women are repulsed by the concept of femininity because of how it's portrayed in misogynistic European culture. The oppression of women has always been integral to white culture. Since integration, we have been groomed to believe that being feminine means pretending to be weak, dumbing ourselves down, and being taken advantage of, which is the typical characteristics of white females. This is the exact opposite of African culture. From our vantage point, exuding femininity has nothing to do with weakness. African women are strong, brilliant, and resourceful. A centered black woman is not afraid to take care of her family with a virtuous, loving spirit. To a healthy black mind, femininity signifies grace, wisdom, and dignity. Do not lower yourself by following European standards of womanhood. However, remain humble about your God-given strengths and talents." And I just wrote that because I think that we rely on feminism as a crutch sometimes, which leads to a lot of negative things, and not really realizing that femininity is valuable. I think sometimes the biggest chauvinists are women. We don't value our own femininity, so we want to outdo men and reject anything feminine. And it really is almost like a psychosis at times that we reject what makes us us, what makes us women, what makes us valuable and contribute to our society. It just, it's crazy to me, so I wanted to address that.
Mm-hmm. Very powerful, very powerful. There's a sister by the name of Donna L. Franklin who wrote a book, I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, a few years ago, called What's Love Got to Do with It? And in this particular book, she was talking about the conditions of relationships between black men and black women. I played a clip from the book earlier, and she has a point in the book when she talks about the retrogressionist, where she talks about how so many black women are falling into a state of regression. And I wanted to play the clip for you and get your feedback on it. We're going to play this clip, and this is from Donna L. Franklin's book, What's Love Got to Do with It? We'll be back in a minute.
Retrogressionists, black women as scapegoats. It was in the political and economic environment created by the Panic of 1873 that the retrogressionist ideology emerged. This term has been used by historians to describe a widespread belief among whites that blacks were regressing to a more primitive state. At the same time that resurgent white Southerners were blaming economic and political problems in the South on the disempowerment of the white planter class, the retrogressionists focused attention on the family life and sexual behavior of African Americans. They postulated that the loose sexual practices of former slaves were rooted in their African heritage. The restraining influence of slavery had ended with emancipation, causing a moral and social retrogression. According to this view, the newly freed slaves demonstrated an inability to restrain themselves and adapt responsibly to freedom and independence. One of the first newspaper columnists to draw attention to the sexual practices allegedly found among freed people was Frank Wilkerson of the New York Sun. Reporting from St. Helena's Island in South Carolina in the early 1880s, he asserted that almost without exception, the Negro of these islands who have Negro blood in their veins are prostitutes. J.L. Tucker, a northerner by birth who later settled in the South after fighting the Confederate Army, echoed Wilkerson's retrogressionist observations on blacks when he found that whole neighborhoods were without a single legally married couple, and few married couples remained faithful to each other beyond a few months, often a few weeks. It was the writings of Philip A. Bruce, a Harvard-trained attorney, that put the retrogressionist propaganda on a firmer foundation than any other book up to that time. In his book, The Plantation Negro as a Free Man, Bruce postulated that emancipation had created a severe deterioration in the social and moral condition of blacks by cutting them off from the spirit of white society. In the chapters entitled Parent and Child and Husband and Wife, Bruce averred that black parental authority could not replace the discipline enforced by the slaveholder, because black parents merely acted upon the impulses of their nature. In Bruce's view, the average black parent was morally obtuse and indifferent, and at times even openly and unreservedly licentious. In particular, he charged black parents with not fostering chastity among their daughters. Bruce then asserted that black men found something strangely alluring and seductive in the appearance of white women due to the wantonness and sexual laxness of black women. To remedy the problems blacks were experiencing, Bruce recommended that they be deported from the United States to prevent anarchy and barbarism. White women echoed the views of Philip Bruce. For example, this description of black women appeared in a national magazine. They, black women, are evidently the chief instruments of the degradation of the men of their race. I sometimes read of virtuous Negro women, hear of them, but the idea is absolutely inconceivable to me. I cannot imagine such a creation as a virtuous black woman. In short, the racist discourse that was being written and published during this period depicted black women as licentious, immoral, and unworthy of male protection or respect. Some black men also believed that it was difficult to find a black Southern woman who was morally virtuous. A black minister charged activist Ida B. Wells, a champion of black men, with losing her teaching position in Memphis because of her involvement in some sexual impropriety. two black social scientists emerged during this period to analyze the problems of black women. In an 1883 essay entitled The Black Woman in the South, Her Neglects and Her Needs, Alexander Crummell argued that in the life of the black woman there was no sanctity of family, no binding tie of marriage, none of the fine felicities and the endearing affections of home. In his 1896 Atlanta University study, Du Bois agreed with Crummell that these problems could be traced to slavery and the white man's exploitation of black women for both sex and labor. Whereas Crummell left the implications of this heritage to the reader's imagination, Du Bois did not. In one of his strongest indictments of black women, Du Bois stated that their sexual immorality was the greatest single plague spot in the reputation of African Americans.
Very, very interesting. So what are your thoughts on that particular clip?
Wow. Well, I definitely don't agree with the vast majority of what was stated in there. Towards the end, they kind of hinted towards slavery a little bit. But, you know, we are the creators of ethics and morals. We are the one that came up with Maayat, which all other codes of conduct are based on. So to go from being the most moral people to ever walk the earth to being in a lower position, which I still don't think that we have white people beat or have ever had white people beat in terms of immorality. They just keep it behind closed doors. But how did we get there? As I said, anytime you find problems between a black man and a black woman, there's always a white person behind the scene. Who created the sex farms? Who created the breeding farms? Who forced us to, at times, be inbred, commit acts of incest, did not allow us to be married, didn't even allow us to parent a lot of times. They sold our babies. They made us breastfeed and nanny their babies instead of our own. So if any of those problems did exist, it certainly is not due to anything innate in us. It comes from being around them and being under their oppression. So again, this is one reason why we need to work things out between black men and black women and start looking at where this problem is really coming from, because the same place it was coming from back then is the same place it's coming from now.
It's interesting that you mentioned that, because this same black female that I mentioned earlier who likes to watch that Scandal television show, she asked me to step in as a mentor for her son, who's 17 years old. And he was beginning to engage in all sorts of incorrect behavior, hanging out with individuals who consider themselves street family. I don't like to say the term gang. And also she said that he was pretty focused on females that were non-black, whether they were so-called Latino, Asian, or European. He just didn't seem to have a preference for black females. So one of the things that I looked at and observed was a lot of the entertainment and the content in her house. And when I look at a lot of black females, whether they are single parents or they have a two-parent household, I think that one of the most destructive things towards raising a black male child is that Victoria's Secret catalog. When you have a teenage black male child, we know that many of them are sexually going to engage in all sorts of visualization and fantasies and so forth. And if all you have is that Victoria's Secret catalog, you are giving him a license to fixate and focus on individuals who don't look like himself. So I oftentimes talk to a lot of couples who are also having issues with their intimacy. And when we sit down and we talk about and discuss what's the reasons why they're having these intimacy issues, it's usually because of a fixation on pornography. I find that a lot of black couples today are attempting to have white sex. And that is a very, very destructive pattern when you're talking about a black love experience, when you're trying to have and engage in white sex. What do you think about individuals who are black, a black man and a black woman, who are using these quote-unquote marital aids that are of non-black people, whether they be pornography, whether they be magazines or whatever, and using them and incorporating them into their intimate relationship?
I definitely think that it's damaging. And I'd like to backtrack for just a moment about the lady and her son. I would say, as a mother, especially if you're raising a child alone, if not, then maybe the mother and the father should both be doing it. First of all, you need to teach your sons to respect their genitalia, because if you don't respect your genitalia, you don't respect yourself. First of all, we need to get that straightened. We also need to make it very clear to them that it is not acceptable and it will not be tolerated for them to bring home anybody that does not look like us. We need to get that clear from the time when they first start showing an interest in little girls, that if you bring somebody here, they will look like me or it will not be accepted. We're far too accepting of that kind of stuff, and then when they bring home a white girl, we let them in our house and then we get mad about it. No, that's a line that we need to set from day one that will not be crossed. As far as pornography, it's definitely unhealthy to visualize about somebody of the of another race. Especially with the conditions that we've been living under and self-esteem issues that we have. However, I think the pornography, even black pornography, is damaging. Number one, it's showing men, black men, a lot of things which they think women enjoy because the actors, you know, on the movies act like they're enjoying it. So they come and approach a real woman and they think that we're going to like certain things, and we're not. And sometimes the women won't even let them know, you know, I'm not enjoying this. So in that way, it leads to an unfulfilling sex life. But also, just in terms of watching it, and the more you watch it, the more you kind of get numb, and then you have to go to more and more extremes in order to get excited. And that leads to a lot of perversity and a lot of things that we're seeing today. So pornography in any form is not something that I would recommend. And I actually talk about that a little bit. I have a chapter in there on sex. Where I say that, you know, there's a lot of other things you can do besides pornography that will actually bring you closer to your partner instead of pulling you away from your partner. So it's fine to experiment, but we just need to keep it, you know, from a black perspective, we don't need to go all out like that.
I definitely agree. I know that for myself, when I began the process of restoration, for myself, I realized that I had far too much of a fixation on pornography. And I realized that it had gone to such a degree that it was impacting my relationship. And I had ended a long-term relationship. I have a 12-year-old daughter, and her mother's a phenomenal woman, you know. And by all means, is and should have been wife material for me. But what happened is, because I had such a fixation on this pornography, I allowed that to impact our relationship to such a degree that it became a comparison thing. Like, why can't you be like the women on the, you know, the booty video or the pornography? And it definitely impacted our relationship severely. And as a result of when that relationship concluded, I recognized that I had some serious issues that I had to deal with. So I went through a self-imposed, a 5-year period of celibacy, which was definitely necessary to cleanse me of all of that. And I know that a lot of folks who are listening to this, that's not an option for them. But me looking at the severity of what was going on in my life, I knew that I definitely needed that cleansing period. So let's talk a little bit about the process of becoming a good Black woman, because we know that there are a lot of sisters who desire a relationship, but a lot of them may not be in a good place in their life. So what are some of your suggestions or strategies for how a Black woman can become a good Black woman?
Well, there's a lot of different tips in the book, and that's really all the book is just different tips, and it goes into a little bit of everything, anything from cooking to natural health to sex to housekeeping to how you communicate. I'll read an excerpt from chapter 2, and I briefly touch on something that I call righteous deception, and it's just a little bit better way that you can relate to your man instead of arguing and instead of coming to him man to man. There's a little femininity that tends to work a little bit better. It says, righteous deception is a concept that requires cleverness, wittiness, and omission. This is true feminine girl power. It means that you may look like you're paying attention when you're not. You may appear intrigued when you're bored. You might say yes, dear, to pacify him until you can strategize something better. You might wear a revealing outfit to distract him from something. You might make him an extra good dinner to butter him up. Most often, you'll make him think that your idea was his. These things are necessary to keep a joyful spirit in the home. Besides that, it's fun. Righteous deception is always done out of love, never treachery. We'll discuss this further in later chapters. And I got a little bit more into that. But a lot of times when we are talking to our men or having an issue with our man, we want to confront them and show that we're just as powerful and just as loud and just as strong as them. And, I mean, we get crazy with it nowadays. We really do. And there's just a better way to do it. There's that feminine touch that makes it smooth and keeps the relationship from getting to a disrespectful level. Because when you hurt him, when you're going off on him, you're only hurting yourself. When you're in a relationship, it's unified. You're complements. You're parts of a whole. So if you're damaging part of your partner, you're damaging yourself. You're two parts of a whole. So I get in a little bit to how you can do some little righteously deceptive things to smooth things over with them. And it works really well.
I think that I am definitely a recipient of some righteous deception in my household. I'm not complaining, though. My process of getting to where that I am right now has been a long journey, but it's been a necessary journey to be where I am today, to be able to be married, where we've celebrated 1 year of marriage last summer. And, you know, and that only came about as a result of me recognizing that I had to deal with my issue. One of the things that I often talk about on this show, and originally when I launched this show 3 years ago, almost 4 years ago, this show was launched and the title of this show was called The Booty Call Show. And I called it that for a specific reason, because I recognized that the individuals that I wanted to reach out to, they saw me a certain way, the so-called player, retired player. And I recognize that in order for me to be able to transition people to where I am right now as an advocate for Black love, is I had to show them the honesty of where I was at that point in my life. One of the things that you think about when you hear a pirate talks about his treasure, and another word for treasure is booty. And oftentimes, people don't recognize the treasure that they are. I hear a lot of guys, particularly men, oftentimes try to arrest the development of women when they say comments like, you can't turn a hoe into a housewife. Now, I find that to be particularly troublesome, particularly because I also suffered from hoe self-esteem, not low self-esteem, but whole self-esteem. And and I believe that a hoe can be both a man and a female. And I was definitely a male hoe. And I think that, you know, a lot of these people who say that, instead of being the police, they're the holies, and they try to arrest the person's development. And no, you can't turn a hoe into a housewife or a husband, but a hoe can turn themselves into a housewife or a husband. And it is a long process. So let's talk a little bit about the actual process of an individual who may have done some things in their past that may not have been the best thing. And that individual might be at that place right now. They may even be listening. I see a lot of people on the line right now on the switchboard. A number of them have their hands up. For those of you who are in the chat room or who are listening, the caller number is 347-308-8527. Once again, the caller number is area code 347-308-8527, push number 1. And I'll know that you have a question or a comment that you want to weigh in with. We'll get to you in a moment. So let's talk a little bit about the process of an individual who wants to transition beyond their whole season to their growth season.
Well, I mean, it's going to be a long process, and nobody is perfect. But I would like to say, especially in modern times, I mean, everybody has a past. There's nobody that's pristine. So that's what always, I'm stunned when people say you can't turn a hoe into a housewife. I mean, really, what is the definition of a hoe? Nobody is pristine. Everybody's done something, unless you grew up living under a rock. Most of us have not. So what you have to do is, you know, after you have gone through enough drama and you are ready for something else, you will start searching. You'll start searching high and low for what is missing in your life and what you can do to change things. I would suggest, you know, spending the time alone. A lot of us are afraid to spend time alone. Spend some time alone. Get to know yourself. Meditate if you have to. Get in touch with your inner voice. Think about things that may have happened to you in your childhood and deal with them. A lot of black women, or I'd even say the majority of black women, have been violated in some way, either in childhood or early adulthood. Well, that needs to be dealt with. You can't keep that inside of you and act like it never happened. You need to talk about it with somebody that you trust, be it your spouse or a friend or a parent. Definitely deal with those issues, because nobody is out there being sexually promiscuous unless they've had some kind of issue or something like that happen to them. They need to know that that kind of stuff was not their fault, and just work on it. You need to read and educate yourself a little bit about our history here and what has happened to us. Because just looking at things the way we tend to, we think it's all the black man's fault. I mean, ever since the color purple, I mean, it's just all the black man's fault. They did this, they did that, and it's just so mean and horrible and wrong. And we never look at what has caused black men to act the way they do and their struggle, because we've gone through this together. It's not that we've been affected and black men haven't, or vice versa. We're all in pain, and we all need to deal with that. And the sooner that we begin that process, the better. So when we come to terms with whatever life we've lived up to that point and all the factors that added into it, when we come to terms with why we are in this condition, then we can start to look at each other and make better decisions and realize that we're not so bad and we are in this together and we need to stop fighting each other and work together. Before you come to that realization, you're going to continue living in hell. There's just not much you can do as long as you think that your compliment is your enemy.
I agree. And whatever you said must have been something that resonated with a lot of folks who are on hold, with the switchboard just lit up. About 7 callers just jumped on while you were just talking, and about 4 of them put their hands up. So we were going to chat a little while longer, but I see that I have a number of callers who are on hold, and I really want this to be a healing platform. So we're going to bring some of our callers on. Caller from the 845. Caller from the 845, you're live. What's your name, question, or comment?
Hey, my name is Joey.
What's good, Joey?
Hey, can you guys help me out with a certain situation? I got kind of a story to tell.
Okay, so
right now I go to a community college, and I had a situation where I was in class. It was one of the first days of school, of like the new semester, and I was waiting for the class to start. You know, it was maybe 10 other people. You know, it was like maybe 10 minutes before the class was about to begin. And I'm just sitting there just reading my new manga comic. You know, it's like Japanese comic book. And then these like kids that I used to go to high school with, they end up coming into the class, and they all started yelling at me, and like they like took my book and like threw it, and like were like, "Why are you reading this? Really, what are you, a little kid?" Like they like calling me all these names and really like hurting my feelings and stuff. And they're just make fun of me. And these guys also went to my high school too, and they would pick on me for reading the Japanese comic books and being into the anime stuff. And then it was really kind of upsetting because even like some of the girls around were also making fun of me. We're also laughing at the guys that are making fun of me. And especially one girl that I liked a lot, and I always had a crush on. She was laughing too. And to make things worse, on my way home from school, I was walking, and one of them threw a milkshake at me, like an old McDonald's milkshake from their car window, and yelled at me. So now I'm just worried because now I'm going to go back to school, and I don't know, like, I don't want them to pick on me anymore. So what should I do?
I'm a bit confused, Joey.
Yeah.
You were calling into a show that's talking about how to be a good black woman to a strong black man, and you called in and you asked a question about bullying.
Well, I thought this was a self-help chat.
Typically, I would say that the best thing that I would encourage you to do so that we can stay focused on the theme for tonight is that you can send me an email. My email address is thef.files@gmail.com. That's thesdotfiles@gmail.com. Because we have some very important work that we need to do tonight. We have some people that are seeking some healing and deliverance in their relationships, and I don't minimize what your situation is, but I really want us to remain focused on tonight's topic. But I do appreciate you calling.
All right. Thank
you for calling, Joey.
All right. Have a good night.
You too. Okay, that was pretty interesting. Yeah. So we're going to go now to caller from the 651 area code. Caller from the 651 area code, name, question, or comment. 651 area code. Your mic is on.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Oh, this is Universal Jones. Greetings.
Greetings, sir. Mm-hmm. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay, as well as can be expected. I have two questions for the guest. Previously in the interview, you stated that you wrote this book like you were speaking to a younger black female. My first question is, what would a black male get from reading your book?
You know what? That's interesting that you ask. And I probably should have brought that up during when I was talking about the writing process. I'm a black woman, so, you know, I understand men as well as can be expected, but, you know, I'm not a man. So I had a number of men read my book, preview it, before releasing it. And I wasn't sure what their reaction would be, but they all really, really liked it. I think that, number one, if you have somebody, if you're in a relationship with somebody, it's great to give it to them. But if you are not in a relationship with somebody, it's going to kind of give you some tips on what to look for in a good woman, because a lot of men have not necessarily seen the caliber of woman, you know, that would be a good wife or a good spouse So you could save yourself probably a lot of heartache by looking through the book, seeing what points are very important to you, and then looking for somebody with those kind of traits.
Sounds good. That makes a lot of sense to me. I was actually going to have my wife look at it. I'm kind of newly married. I think that this would be beneficial for us in our coupling. So my next question was, could you explain, you mentioned respect your genitalia, and I thought that that was pretty interesting. Could you kind of elaborate on that a little bit more and explain what that means by respecting one's genitalia?
Of course. A lot of times we talk about people respecting themselves when it comes to sex, and that's always only in relation to women. But it's not just women who have that problem. A lot of times men who sleep around a lot, it's not necessarily just hormones or something like that. A lot of times it's low self-esteem coupled with media influence and pornography and things like that. But anybody that really respects themselves, when you get to that point, you're not going to just give your body to anybody, whether you're a male or a female, because you can still get sexually transmitted diseases. You can still create a baby, and a lot of times men aren't thinking about that. It's not just the woman who gets stuck with the baby. A woman has a choice. She can have the baby or not have the baby, and you may never know. But if you get a woman pregnant and she does have the baby, that's 18 years of your life when you are going to have a significant amount of money taken out of your check every week. And men don't understand until it happens to them how devastating that can be. It goes beyond supporting your children. We all know that you should support your children. But child support is a racket, and it's a racket that can really, really ruin your life. So if you really respect yourself and your future, you're not just going to go around sleeping with people who you would not want to be stuck with for the next 18 years or, honestly, for life, some kind of lifelong commitment. If you are the kind of person that wants multiple women, you may go for that kind of relationship. You may try to engage in some kind of polygamous situation. There's some of that going around in our community if you can find women willing to do that. But you're not just going to go around haphazardly getting with this person and this person, hooking up at the club, risking your health for that. But that comes with maturity. A lot of us, because it's not being taught to children, we don't get that kind of self-respect until we're in our 30s or 40s or 50s. And, man, how different would our lives be if we would have had that when we were 16 years old and out there making mistakes?
Right. Well, that was all I had. Thank you. It's been very constructive. And I think I'm going to pick up your book and actually read it with my wife. We'll read it together. I think that might be a good thing for us to prepare for just dealing with our children and our future together. So thank you, and that's all I had.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And for those of you who are listening online, I want you to know that you can pick up the book on Amazon.com. The name of the book is God's Gift, How to Be a Good Black Woman to a Strong Black Man. And it's listed under the author's name of Angela Freeman. So yeah. You can look that up on Amazon.com. I would strongly encourage you to get the book. You can get the book as an e-book. It's available as an e-book right now. I know lots of you are reading e-books during your commute, so download it to your Kindle and read that on the train. Make sure your wife and your husband, if you're either or, downloads that to their Kindle. And make this something that you talk about in the evening. You know, if you're in a dating phase of your relationship, it's definitely something that I would encourage you to get at this point. Let's talk a little bit about the mating and dating process. What are some of the things that you think a potential or prospective compliment should ask of another individual who desires to be in a relationship with them?
Absolutely everything. And before I go into that answer, I did just want to say it is available as an ebook now. God willing, next month it should be available in print, and that will be available on the War on the Horizon website, www.waronthehorizon.com. So you can look for the actual hard copy towards the end of next month. But when we are in courtship or dating, that's really one of the most important times. That sets the stage for everything else that's going to happen in our relationship. If you make a bad decision, then you can try as hard as you want to, but it just isn't going to work. Every relationship can't be saved. Some of them, if you just made a bad decision and you realize that, sometimes you have to start over. That's why it's so important. During that process, you should be asking all kinds of things. How many children do you want? Are we going to homeschool them? Are they going to go to the public school system? What kind of diets are we going to eat? Are you a vegetarian and I eat pork? Is that going to work? What's going on? Do we celebrate holidays? What's your political stance? How do you view certain people that I hold high? I might have a certain person that I just look up to as a role model. How do you view that person? Are we compatible? That's what we have to look at, because people think that opposites attract. Opposites do not attract long term. If you want to build something, you have to have something in common. You can't build if you're constantly opposing each other. We have to work together, and it's going to be so frustrating if you just can't agree on anything. I've been married, it'll be 7 years in a couple of weeks. I'll be having my anniversary. And if you met my husband, he's like the male version of me. There's some things he's into that I'm not, but not a whole lot. We're pretty much like the same person, and that's why it works well. We have our differences being male and female, but we're interested in the same things. We share the same values. You can't be with somebody if you don't share the same values. It's going to be a constant struggle. So the purpose of courtship and that whole process should be to find out as much information as possible. And you don't stop with that person. You want to question their parents, their siblings, their cousins. Take a look at their friends. You can judge a lot about a person by their friends. Are they who they say they are? Because if you say that you're one person and then you look at their friends and it's something completely different, that might, set off some bells. Not that they're a fraud, but they could be. What do people in the community say about them? They should have somebody who can vouch for them. So those are the kind of things that you look at. You might want to consult elders. When I met my husband, I told my father, do you like him? Because if you don't like him, I'm not going to get with him. Because at that point, I wasn't necessarily confident in my ability to choose a good man. So I let a man do it for me. I liked my husband, but if my father would have said no, it would have been a no. And I know a lot of people like that because we haven't been trained on what to look at. We look at superficial things, and we really don't understand what's going to be that glue to keep a relationship together. So consult elders, look for people in the community that know him, and just look and see. Nobody's going to be perfect, but the flaws that they have, is that something that you can deal with? Because you don't want to get in a relationship and then try to change somebody. Everybody evolves in a relationship. They might be polished up a little bit, but they're not going to change, and they shouldn't change. You have to let that person be free to be who they are. So you want to make sure that whatever flaws you come across is something that you can deal with, something you're not going to try to change, and then you can be happy together. But it's very important. You can't look over that part just because they look good or just because it's been a long time since you've been with somebody and you're lonely. You really have to be serious about that.
I agree. One of the things I follow some advice that I heard from an elder, Neely Fuller Jr., a number of years ago, when he talked about the courtship phase and asking questions. And I think that as a couple or potential complement to another individual, you should ask no less than 200 questions. And I mean, seriously. You should, if you are a single person right now, you should be sitting down and writing out at least 200 questions. What it is that you want to know about another person. From everything from, what their sexual history or preference is, to whether this individual has ever been convicted of a crime, what their credit status is, whether they have fathered or mothered any children, what their relationships is with those children or the parents of those children. I mean, I find far too many people get caught up in the emotionalism or the attraction to a person, and 9 times out of 10 don't sit down and ask significant, serious questions. and then they find themselves emotionally attached to an individual who they don't know, and before they know it, they're calling themselves in a relationship, and they haven't really taken the time to know anything. This is why I say, for me, and I encourage other people, that you need to remove the physical element of sexual intimacy while you're going about the process of courtship, learning about one another and trying to determine whether this is a person you want to go to the next level with, because sex will definitely cloud your judgment. And folks can say it doesn't, or they want to test it out and all these other different things. But it was interesting in dating my wife, because when we began dating, I was upfront with her and I was like, well, I've been celibate for 5 years. And that hadn't been her experience with the men that she met. And she was like, what? And I was like, yeah. And she was like, but you're an attractive guy. You could, you know, whatever. And I'm like, this is by choice. And I made this choice because I visited a family member in prison. And I saw how much of a transformation had gone on in his life from when he was on this side of the wall. And this was all because he got placed in a situation which he had no control over and was forced to deal with himself. So I voluntarily dealt with myself, and I realized that it changed a lot of the choices that I made in the women that I was selecting. So I encourage every brother who says he is a strong man or aspires to be a strong man, you have to build up your strength and your discipline so that you're able to appreciate a good woman who will become a great wife eventually. We got a number of callers who are on the line. I want to go to 973. What's your name, question, and comment?
Peace. My name is Arenike. How are you?
I'm very well, sis. Thank you for calling in.
Peace. And Sister Shabazz, how are you?
Peace. I'm great. How are you?
I'm great. I just wanted to build a little bit about my previous experience. You had touched on, asking a lot of questions, ask everything, ask, you know, your potential compliment, you know, ask the his friends, his family, the community about him. That was something that I didn't do in a previous relationship. And once I got married, everything came out. And his friends, family, basically was telling me that I made a big mistake. And, I've learned that my husband, was not the person that he had presented himself to be, but he was also an alcoholic, and that was something that I wasn't ready to deal with. And there was a lot of consequences that shortly followed soon after we got married. And I just want to tell listeners that it is important to ask everything that you can think of. If you can't think of 200 questions, get your friends, get your family to help you create those questions, something that is tangible, something that will benefit you and your future family in the long run. So I just wanted to comment on that. I really didn't have much to say after that. I get a little bashful.
Thank you. Is it okay if I head on to that a little bit?
Sure.
I would say I definitely agree with everything you said. And in these days and times, I wouldn't just stop with asking questions. I would also do a credit check and a background check, just period. I think that's necessary. But after you ask those questions, a lot of times women, we like to talk, and I talk about this a lot in the book. We tend to talk and talk and talk. After you ask questions, be quiet and listen to the answers. Because even if somebody does not give you an honest answer, if you let them talk long enough, they will tell on themselves. Things will start not adding up. That's the best way to tell if you're dealing with somebody honorable or someone who is dishonest is to ask the question and then let them talk. When they stop talking, then ask another probing question. This is another part of the feminine deception, or the righteous deception, I should say, is to act just so interested. It doesn't matter if you're interested or not. Keep them talking. We have to train ourselves sometimes to be quiet, because sometimes what we'll do is we'll ask a question, they'll start to answer it, and then, we'll interrupt them. We don't even hear what they said. So, ladies, that's the most important thing since we're on the topic of questioning. After you ask the question, be quiet, let him talk. When he comes to a silence, there's a break in the conversation, ask him another question. Keep him talking, and you stay quiet. That also gives you an air of mystique. Men tend to like that when they can't quite figure out a woman because you haven't told them all your business on the first date. It works really well.
Yes, and may I add something? When you were speaking about basically effective listening, that's what I perceive that to be. In my previous experience, I was so caught up in the physical beauty of this man and the fact that he was quote unquote well read. And I find that a lot of brothers who are very book smart, they carry on that that air of arrogance that is very attractive to the woman, and a woman like myself, you know, gets so caught up in that, like, okay, not only is he's a beautiful person, but he's smart, but it wasn't who he really is. So and also, you know, the sex, you know, you get caught up in that to where all the other questions that you may have had in your mind goes out the window because you feel like, I know this guy. We're close. We're getting along. We could talk about everything. But what's really important always get pushed aside until problems begin. I just wanted to add on with that too, sister.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Absolutely. I see a number of callers who are on the switchboard. If you're on the switchboard and you have a question or comment, press number one on your phone. That will raise your hand so that I know that you have a question or a comment. If you're listening in the chat or you're listening online, the call-in number is area code 347-308-8527. Once again, the call-in number is area code 347-308-8527. I have a question from a listener who was listening, and they're chatting with me on Facebook. And this listener asked, what is your perspective on polygamy? What do you think of polygamous relationships?
That is always a hot topic. I am fairly neutral on the topic, honestly. I see where if it was practiced properly, it could be a value to the Black community. It could definitely improve some of the morality in the Black community. But that would take a lot of emotional maturity, which we really don't have at this point. We're not even getting the one relationship down right now. And to get Black women, Americanized Black women especially, who are willing to do that and happy about doing that, I don't necessarily think that that's realistic. You know, I can't think of any Black woman that I know personally who would be happy about that. And in order for that to work, it's not just the man's decision. It has to be the family into it and doing it for a cause, not just because the man wants to have sex with a bunch of people, but because we're building something and we're going to be productive with it. I just don't know too many people that have the maturity to pull that off.
So by that token, what do you think of polyandry, where it's a female with more than one partner?
I do not see how that is productive in any way, shape, or form. Polygamy, and I'm not an expert on polygamy, let me say that, but polygamy is generally used to develop economics, to take care of women who may not otherwise be taken care of children that may not otherwise be taken care of. And it's really a stabilizing structure within a lot of original cultures. You know, it's funny to me that we ban that we encourage homosexuality so much in America today, but polygamy is just like, oh, no, we can't talk about that. No, I think that polygamy has a place possibly besides monogamy when we are at that level that we could actually do that and do it well after we get the one relationship thing down. But women just sleeping with a bunch of men, I don't see how that could help at all.
That
does happen around the world, but it's a minority, and we're in a position where there are more men than women. So how one woman taking up a bunch of men could help, I just don't understand that.
Now, I want to talk to you about, I know a lot of sisters today are dating and mating with black men who are bruised, battered, and scarred. Many of these black men are suffering from all sorts of mental, spiritual, and cultural afflictions. When I think about my own journey, I think about I didn't even realize how much it affected me, just the names that I was called growing up. I hear a lot of people today, you know, say that, you know, for instance, we talk about the word nigger. Today it's common for folks to address one another in that term, with that terminology. But I think about when I was growing up, I grew up in a Pan-Africanist family, and that wasn't something that folks embraced, at least the wider family. But there were some pockets within the family which embraced that terminology. They were shunned upon. But I saw a movie a few years ago, Antoine Fisher, and he talked about how they called him nigger so much that he thought it was his middle name. In fact, I want to play a clip from that particular movie.
Ms. Tate, she used to put us against each other so much, we started hating each other. But I think deep down inside, we really hated ourselves.
What do you mean?
Keith was half white. She would try to compare Keith to me and Dwight. You know, he had the good hair and we had the bad hair. She used to say how Keith was better than us because his father was white. I wish that was Keith.
Not even Keith could escape from being called a nigger. She hardly used our names. She said the word nigger so often, called us nigger so often, that we can tell who she was talking to by the way she said the word nigger.
Now, that being said, there are lots of black men today who are very dysfunctional, and many of them are walking around dysfunctional and don't realize that they are. How is it for a good black woman, how can she build up a black man who may have, she can see that he is a strong black man, but beneath that strength or beneath that exterior of strength, she knows that there are some unspoken hurts. So what are some ways in which she can try to build up that black man?
Well, you have to be very, very careful of your words, and that's when dealing with any black man, because black men, more than anybody else, are in need of feeling respected, because they're not. You know, it's funny that you bring up the N-word and played that clip. I was unaware of, you know, this being an issue with black men, but I was talking to somebody on Facebook. Somebody had quoted a excerpt from my book, and he had said, you know, well, a lot of us liked or started going towards white people because when we were young, the black women or the black girls wanted the light-skinned brother. And that was kind of weird to me because I was never like that. I was always the one that wanted the most chocolate brother in class. But, you know, I thought about that because we always say it's an issue for the black woman, but it's also an issue for the black man. And I didn't really realize how deep that went. You know, when you talk to your man, when you communicate, you just always have to keep in mind that you're a unit. You cannot be disrespectful. You can't holler. You can't hit somebody with a hot, greasy skillet. None of that stuff we like to do. I have a chapter on communication in the book, and I'll read a short passage from that. It says, you don't always have to agree with your man, but you should always maintain a level of decency and respect during debate. Only children and people who think on the level of children maintain no control over their emotions. There's a way to disagree amicably, and don't be silly enough to believe that that disagreements must always be settled. There are some things that he promotes that you will never believe in. Yet, if you're wise enough, you will discover how to pick your battles wisely and when to concede on those things that don't really matter. Just because you allow him the last word on an issue doesn't mean that you change your mind. It simply means that you chose peace. And we need to do that more. We need to let the small stuff go and choose peace. That's what we need more than anything in our home is balance. And there was another excerpt, if we have time, that I can read that kind of speaks to little boys and some of the things that we do to hurt them growing up. I'm not sure if we have time for that.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay. This is from a chapter on raising children, and I go into the difference between raising daughters and raising sons. This comes from a part that's titled, Do You Want to Lose the Respect of Two People at Once? Just compare the child to their father in a negative way. Here are a few examples. You are lazy, just like your father. You will never amount to anything, just like your father. You are stupid, just like your father. I can't stand you. You look just like your father. You ain't ish, just like your father. You ain't nothing but a nappy-headed N-word, just like your father. Children love to be compared to their parents, but only in good ways. I'm amazed when I see my people saying these things to their children, usually their sons. I wonder if they hear themselves. If you are having problems with your children, do you think ostracizing them and their daddy will help? Speaking to your children in this way instantly lowers their self-esteem. If mama says you're worthless or stupid, she must be correct. She gave birth to you and she knows you best, right? If mama thinks you're stupid and won't amount to anything, why try? This also alienates the father who could provide help with guidance and discipline. Since mama says daddy's no good, why should the child listen to him? He's just a no-good N-word who doesn't take care of the child anyway. On top of that, mama says you're doomed to grow up just like him. These are things that we need to change.
Absolutely. I see that I'm getting Facebook, and I have a number of callers that are on the switchboard. Caller number is 347-308-8527. Once again, the caller number is area code 347-308-8527. Press the number 1 on your phone, and I know that you have a question or comment. We're going to go to area code 678. 678, you there?
Yeah, how you doing? This is WT in Atlanta.
How you doing, brother?
Hey, how you doing? I do have a question, but first I want to commend this effort. It's a beautiful thing sometimes when we get to hear ladies talking to ladies. It's very unfortunate sometimes that men are so frustrated where they feel like they can tell ladies what they should be doing when actually we need to hear more from classier, nurturing ladies. With that said, I'll say my experience is similar. I grew up a brother in the days of the velvet pictures of black women with afros. I just love dark-skinned women. But I found that they were the most vicious toward me. And you know, I tell people that long before men were calling women bees and whatever, I used to always hear this dog reference, dog, dog, dog. And it was so funny when I started doing wrong and started making money, it was actually the turnaround then. Then it was ladies trying to get something from me. And sadly, it was the white women who were sincere. And I always thought that was really strange when I was 16. I was like, why is it that the girls I want to be with want me for my money, but these other ones play the role so well? And so I say all that to say this before I ask my question, is that it's very sad that we have this little circle of life thing going on in our black community where we tell our boys, don't love yourself, and we tell our girls, love yourself so you don't need a man, and all these little things that keep us apart. And now here you are with a great book reteaching women that they don't have to do all that. You know, it's really sad. Now, here's my question. How is it that, whether it's in your book, which I will purchase, how is it that you believe our younger ladies who have been indoctrinated with this feministic American lie of family, how do we go about unmasking that and showing that, yeah, you can get loved as you get older. You don't have to be the stripper on the pole to find love. How do we get to this part of the book where we re-nurture our daughters to believe that those things are possible?
I would say the most important thing that you can do to keep your daughter away from that line of thinking is to be there. Be there and watch her and protect her. Beware of who is around your children. As I said earlier, a lot of women who act so obnoxiously, they're doing it out of pain and also out of never being trained to act better or be better. They think it's normal. But most of that comes out of a culture where child sexual abuse is ingrained. It's part of the culture, and it happens more than you could imagine. And so if you're a young girl getting exposed to that, and that's what you think men want, because that's what they've been taking from you since you were a child, that's going to have a negative impact on you. I don't know any girls that grow up and say, I want to be a stripper. That kind of thing is imposed on them. And then that helps strengthen the gender war, because a certain part of you starts to hate men. You think that men are your enemy. It's hard to tell somebody that men aren't their enemy when they've been violated. And the same thing actually goes for sons, because a lot of little boys are being violated too, and that's why you have a lot of the problems that we're having with our men losing their masculinity. So the number one thing is to be there. As far as women who are already grown up and trying to get them over to the line of thinking, there's no way you can force it on anybody. It just comes when you finally had enough. There comes a time in every woman's life, usually between their mid-20s and their mid-30s, when they've just done enough, seen enough, and had enough. And then they start looking for another solution. And hopefully this book will be part of it, because, like I said, growing up, not having a role model to look at, to really show me womanhood. And I know a lot of other girls went through it, too. Either their mothers weren't good examples, or they worked a lot and they weren't there, or, just whatever. Hopefully this book will give them advice that I wish that I would have had a lot younger. It would have saved me a lot of headaches, believe me. That's all that I can really suggest. It's not going to be for everybody. We can't save everybody, but we do need to start saving who we can.
So this is on Amazon, right?
Yes, sir. The ebook is on Amazon, and the hard copy book will be out at some point next month on the War on the Horizon website.
All right. Thank you very much, Esther.
Thank you.
Thank you, brother, for calling in. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, for the live feed, we're coming up on 19 minutes for the live feed. We may go into the after stream, but for the live feed, for those of you who may be listening online in the chat room or otherwise, if you want to go beyond the live feed, you need to call in. The call-in number is 347-308-8527. Once again, the call-in number is area code 347-308-8527. And I wanted to, for those of you who call in, press number one on your phone, and I'll know that you have a question or a comment. So I wanted to ask you, because I had heard a number of the interviews that you had done, and you talked a bit specifically. There was something that you said, if you want an above-average man, you have to be willing to be an above-average woman. And with the first family of the United States, the president and the first lady, happy to be black, Barack Obama and Michelle Obama. And let's put aside whatever we may think of their political policies and so forth. But I hear a lot of black women say that they want a Barack Obama, meaning they want a black man who is focused, who is ambitious, who seemingly is family-oriented and goal-oriented. But oftentimes, a lot of these black women who I hear say they want a Barack Obama, they're not bringing Michelle Obama qualification. What can men and women do by way of dealing with the reality of where they are, as opposed to focusing on what they would like to be, or, you know, someone they would like to be with, and knowing that they don't have the qualifications to be with that man or woman?
Well, I mean, you always have to work on yourself. You should not be looking to get into any relationship when you know that you're not ready for that, when you know you have a lot of work to do. Before I got married, I had stopped dating at all. I was not interested. When I first heard about my husband, I did not want to talk to him. We actually lived in different states, and a mutual friend kind of was trying to set us up, and he didn't want to do it, and neither did I. I was just taking time out for myself, dealing with my own issues. And sooner or later, we ended up talking, and we hit it off. But, you know, one thing that kills me about women, and my friend, a sister named Jihan, she actually said something the other day, and she's so much more eloquent than I could ever be, but a lot of single women really misunderstand relationships and how things happen. What is the reality of it? A man does not generally come into a relationship polished unless he was in another relationship that polished him up. He may have some good attributes, but what women see when they look at a married man, or, you know, they say all the good men are taken. No, what you're looking at is the work of that woman and the man that has polished him up. Being married is work. You put a lot of effort into your spouse, and having the responsibility of family, getting that nurturing, that understanding, that counsel that comes from a dedicated wife, that's what you see in that man that's so attractive. So what it really is a misunderstanding and maybe even a little bit of laziness. You need to be willing to put in that work. Now, I'm not saying get with somebody who's completely dysfunctional, has nothing going for them. No. You know, obviously get with somebody halfway stable that's not a psychopath that you can get along with. But that refinement and that polished finished product that we're so attracted to, that takes work. You're not just going to find somebody like that and just instantly be in heaven. You've got to work for that. And if you're not willing to work for that, you're not going to get it, and honestly, you don't deserve it. You know, and the same thing goes with men. You know, they help to polish women too. But there's something about the power and the feminine principle that can just, changes a man, because I don't believe in changing the basic characteristics of somebody. But it just really improves a man when he has that nurturing home environment to come home to, that peace and quiet, and somebody that can deal with him wisely. Makes all the difference in the world.
I agree wholeheartedly. You know, that brings me to an area in which I definitely wanted to talk about, and that is the process of making a happy home. We're going to take a short break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about how to make a happy home. We'll be back in a minute.
S-Dot is now coaching on the game. Get the Getting Over It guide, exposing the game. Learn how to stop playing yourself on RTK Communications. Don't hate the player. Learn to peep game. Exposing the game, the first volume of the 7 series Get Your Mind Right, from inspiring author, motivational speaker, and empowerment coach, S-Dot Jones.
What's good, people? We're back. It's your man, S-Dot. Tonight we're talking to author of the book, God's Gift, How to Be a Good Black Woman to a Strong Black Man, Angela Freeman, a.k.a. Lady Sabaz, from War on the Horizon. And I wanted to talk about the recipe of making a happy home. What are some of the things that you think are essential in making a happy home?
Making a happy home does not have to be hard. The more you get into it, you may want to try different things. You know, it's like an art form, but honestly, men are not like women. They're pretty basic, and it doesn't take a lot to keep them happy. The first thing, and probably the most difficult thing for women, is to be quiet. Sometimes let him come home and have a little bit of peace when he comes home. When he walks through the door, if you're already there, greet him with a smile. We are surprised a lot of times how we walk around with these looks on our face, like we are ready to cuss out anybody that says the wrong thing to us. It makes such a difference when you just put a smile on your face. It's not hard. It makes you feel better. It'll make you happy. So when he comes through the door, greet him with a smile on the face. How are you doing? You know, let him have a little bit of time to himself if he needs it when he comes home. A lot of people like to unwind for a little while. Don't burden him with problems as soon as he walks through the door. Give him some time to relax. If you can, depending on your schedules and how things work, try to have some food on the stove. A lot of women think they're too good to cook nowadays, and I think that that is a shame. That's why we look the way we do. That's why our community is overweight. That's why we're sick. If you love your man, you want him to be here a long time, get in the kitchen. Microwaving is not cooking. Microwaving is killing. Throw out your microwave.
learn how to turn the stove on, learn how to heat something up in the oven without burning the house down. Don't get all your food out of boxes and bags and pre-made chemical-filled garbage. Chop some vegetables up, make some rice, you know, whatever you eat. Make him a good meal. You know, as long as you are greeting him with a smile, giving him peace, cooking a good meal, cleaning your home. And this, a lot of people blame children for why their house is dirty. That's so bogus. If you have children, that means you have an extra set of arms. From the time they can walk, you teach them to put their toys up, and they can start helping you. But keep your house clean. Nobody wants to come out home to a dirty home. Even if the man's dirty, he would still appreciate having the home reasonable. Don't be filthy. Just little things like that make a big difference and make you stand apart in a crowd. You know, those are some of the major things. If we can get that, then we can work on some of the other things. You should also know a little bit about nutrition. You should know about natural health. I go into that a little bit in the book, just some basics on herbs that can help with common problems. Your man shouldn't always have to go to the doctor for things. If you're cooking good meals, generally he won't spend a lot of time at the doctor's anyway. But if he has a condition that he's going for, learn how to treat it at home. You know, maybe he has a heart problem. Well, maybe if you know a little bit about herbs, you might give him some hawthorn. You might give him some cayenne. If he has diabetes, you might give him some cinnamon, cinnamon tea, cinnamon in his food. Food is your medicine. You can season your food in order to heal your family. It just takes basic knowledge, and it's all available. I give a few basic things in my book, but you can go online. You don't have to buy the book for that. Go online and Google some things. Buy an herb book. Learn these simple things. These are the things that make you invaluable and make you a good wife. We have to start taking responsibility for our family, for their health, physically, emotionally, just general well-being. It's a must.
I agree wholeheartedly. You know, it's interesting that you say that because earlier today I was actually in the store picking up some groceries, and a gentleman, he looked to be about mid-40s, came up to me, and black man, and he was like, I don't mean to interrupt you, and this was a health food store, and he was like, What are some things that I could get to eat healthier? I'm trying to eat healthier. So I was like, okay. You know, I said, well, what do you like to eat? And he's like, you know, well, you know, it's a process. I'm trying to change my diet right now. You know, he's like, well, what are some good snacks? So I'm showing him some healthier alternatives in terms of, like, chips and stuff. And then he mentions to me that he was diagnosed with cancer, and he said that he had some kind of cancer of the T cells, and he seemed pretty shook up about it. And just listening to him, you know, I felt bad for him, and you know, I shared with him some things that I learned over the years in terms of detoxifying himself, and I learned many of these things from my wife, who was a nurse, but she was a nutritionist before she was a nurse, and she lives a holistic lifestyle in terms of very much every product in this house is organic. You know, we're not vegans, but we eat very well. We don't consume red meat. The chicken and the fish that we eat is organic. We make sure that it's farm-raised and things of that nature. And just listening to him share with me about his relationship, you know, I thought about how much of that contributed to the diagnosis that he had. I mean, he had the protruding abdomen, you know, a lot of the belly fat, and things of that nature. And I realized that men really need to do a better job in selecting the individuals who become their complement. I mean, you really need to sit down and look at and examine, you know, a person's lifestyle. One of the things that's interesting about my wife and I is that when we began our interest and one another. We actually met in the supermarket, and I was very observant of the things that she was buying. And when I visited her home, I was very observant of the things that she had in her refrigerator, in her cabinets, and the things that she had on her bookshelf. And I think that more people should be a lot more mindful of those things. We're coming down to 3 minutes in a live feed. I want to remind folks you have less than 3 minutes to call in. The call in number is 347-308-8527. Once again, the call in number is area code 347-308-8527. For those of you who are on the line, when we are hitting the top of the hour, while I still have control of the switchboard, I'm going to open all of the mics. If you don't have a question or comment, I ask that you keep down the background noise and place your phone on mute so that we can continue the conversation. And if you do have something to add at any point, we ask that you be courteous of other callers. So once again, the caller number is area code 347-308-8527. Caller number is 347-308-8527. For those of you who are listening live, you will be able to hear the balance of the show, which is in the after stream. You will be able to hear that later on tonight. You can click back by and download the balance of the show to hear the balance of the discussion. So I want to thank everyone who is listening live, those who are in the chat room. I haven't been able to load my chat room today, so I want to thank each and every one of you. I want to remind you, if you have questions or comments or ideas for forthcoming shows, you can send me an email at ts.files@gmail.com. Once again, that's thesdotfiles@gmail.com, thesdotfiles@gmail.com. You can follow me on Facebook or Twitter, just /thesdotfiles. So thank you again. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, I am opening all of your mics, and if you don't have a question or comment, remember, please place your phone on mute, and I will read your number off when I'm going to get to you. And if you have a question or comment, then you can chime in then. So I did have a number of people who have their hands raised. I see 973, you have your hand raised again. Did you have a question or comment?
Yes, I do have a comment, actually. For the last segment of the show, you and Lady Shabazz had spoke about how to make and keep a happy home. And one of my suggestions for our sisters is to keep everything new, keep everything fresh, be creative. What I've learned as both a married woman and now a single woman, because I've been separated for over 2 years, was that I never watched too much TV. There is always a plethora of books, not books where you don't learn anything. Everything is non-fictional. Everything is African-centered. And it's important to not only just keep these books, for decoration, because that's not what they're for, but open up the books, read the books, and you have an open discussion with your mate. It helps to strengthen the bond that you have, because you actually have something to talk about, and it'll both make you happier. One of the things that I have learned that when you are able to discuss things in regard to the African-centered community, whether it be how to become a stronger family unit or how to go out into the community and be strong together to help even further strengthen that community, it leaves less room for complaints. A lot of brothers who come home, they don't want to hear, you know, the mundane constantly in, you know, day in, day out, and here it is, you have all of these books. You won't pick up a book, but you want to complain about something that, you know, that has no value. And I just wanted to add that. And oh, and one more thing. When you get your compliment, have your compliment, you know, that doesn't mean to just settle. You know, always flirt with one another. That that'll always keep a smile on his and her face. You're always flirting. You dress like how you met, and you keep it that way. You know, don't walk around with just a house coat looking miserable all day, because that will also put a damper on your relationship. Peace.
Absolutely. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you.
So, Lady Shabazz, let's talk a little more about making a happy home. So, any suggestions?
Oh, there's so many things you can do. As I said, that's the basic. If you have peace, if you cook, if your house is clean, your children are well taken care of, that's a good start. Once you do that, then you can look at, you know, like I said, it's an art form. You can look at color therapy. Maybe, you know, if you're ready to paint and redecorate your home, be cognizant of what colors you paint, the effects it has on your body, your mood, things like that. Sex is a big part of making a home. I have a lot of suggestions on that. I don't know how far we can really go into it on a program, but there's some tips in there to keep it fresh, but in a dignified kind of way. You don't need to act like a stripper or a porn star to keep it fresh. You do want to maintain your dignity, but there's a lot that you can do within those bounds. You know, raising your children well, dressing. That's something that I also addressed in the book. The sister said, don't walk around all the time with a robe on. That's very true. Men are visual, and women don't realize that. That's one of the things that separates men from women. They want something to look at. A lot of times we can get into relationships. We let ourselves go. We gain weight. And we get very insecure sometimes. And when we get insecure, then we want to hide our bodies from our men. And some women, especially in the conscious community, you know, they cover up anyway. And they don't realize that that doesn't mean when you're inside of the house. I joke a lot of times and I say, if you cover 3/4 of your body when you're out of the house and only cover 1/4 of it when you come home, give your man something to look at. You don't have to cover up in your house. If you have children, of course, you want to be respectful. But you can still, you know, instead of wearing some nasty jogging pants that don't fit and have holes in it and don't match anything, get a nice little maxi dress. They sell them all summer long, all winter long. Get something that's appropriate that's going to keep you comfortable. But there's ways that you can go about just refining yourself, and you'll find that you feel better about yourself when you're not frumpy all the time. It'll make you want to exercise so you can look good in your clothes without a body shaper. Nobody wants to see a fine-looking woman and then come home, she take off that body shaper, and it's a completely different woman, or take off the makeup, it's a completely different woman. That kind of stuff can make you more confident, and confidence is a good thing. The more confident you are, the more fun you can be. So those are some things that I would definitely suggest as far as homemaking. We cannot underestimate the physical side of it, the visual side of it. All of that comes into play.
I would agree. And just to add balance to the conversation, I'd like to offer some suggestions to some of the brothers. You know, oftentimes, okay, you may have a strenuous day, as well as she may have had a strenuous day, whether she is a homemaker or someone who is working outside of the home. I think that it is very important that couples pray and meditate together
You have to pick out the times that work for you. It's based upon your schedule. But I think that praying and meditating together really solidifies your bond. I think that it is very important as you age or whatever level of life that you're at, I think it's important for couples to work out together. I think that it adds to the vitality and the sexual chemistry between a man and a woman if they work out together, whether it be going for a jog on a Saturday morning or a weekday morning, or doing cardio in the household. My wife and I, we got the Insanity DVD series, and, you know, we do that oftentimes in the house. We have a one-year-old, and it's funny because instead of my wife gaining all the weight during the pregnancy, I gained the weight, you know, that sympathy pregnancy thing. So part of our process has been to get me back in shape, has been, you know, working out together. That's been very important. I also think that it's important that, you know, you turn that television off and you spend some quality time together. Maybe you can pick up a book like, you know, God's Gift, How to Be a Good Black Woman to a Strong Black Man. You may want to debate some aspects of it. Or another thing that we do is we get audio books from the library and we play them on stereo while we're cooking dinner or we're going about our evening, so that we have a opportunity to experience the actual narrative of whatever the story may be, whether it's fiction or it's self-help or whatever it is. You know, we have something that's going on and we can talk about it. We can pause it at different points and discuss different things that we may have heard in the audio book. And even if you do watch TV, it's important to sometimes sit down and watch those programs together. Everything that's on TV may not be the most constructive. Sometimes you will watch some mindless programs just for pure enjoyment. But be able to enjoy them together and discuss them together. You may want to read the newspaper together and things like that. I think it's important that black couples be critical, you know, critical thinkers, so that they learn how to decipher and decode the information that they take within themselves on a day-to-day basis. So I think that's important, and I think it shows a good model for the children to see their mother and their father interacting. For the brothers, you know, chip in around the house. You know, a lot of men who don't feel like they want to do any housework. However, in my household, I realize I don't want my wife coming to bed tired and exhausted, and too tired and exhausted to be able to enjoy that marital bed. So I know that in order to make sure that she comes to bed in with energy, it's much better for me to take on some of the chores around the household, whether that be oftentimes what I do is I like to season food and I like the preparation process. So I may do the preparation and she may do the cooking. And while she's cooking, whenever a pot is done or something like that, I'll wash that pot, so that by the time that we sit down to dinner, the only dishes that are left over are the dishes that we're eating on, so that, you know, we're able to enjoy our full evening without her having to go into the kitchen afterwards and wash pots and pans. And, you know, and it's great because our daughter gets to see her parents, you know, working hand in hand. So I think that it's important to have that sort of balance in the household. Those are my suggestions.
I think that those are really good suggestions, especially about doing things together. One thing that me and my husband have started doing is martial arts together. There was a while I was being hard-headed because he did one style and I did another, and both of us were hard-headed. We didn't want to compromise and start doing the other person's style. So finally I gave in, and I've noticed since we've been working out together, you know, being partners and sparring and things like that, you learn to communicate better. You learn to move together, be in rhythm with each other, compliment each other. And that actually rolls over into the relationship. You can actually take activities that you do mutually and actually use those as actually an aid in your relationship. It's amazing how that works sometimes. So I thought that that was a really, really great suggestion.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I just think that, you know, if your partner is your life partner, and I find that too often people try to build separate lives outside of their partner, and of course you're an individual and you're going to have interests and things that appeal to you that may not appeal to your partner because you're an individual. But I recognize that this is the person who you spend the most significant aspect of your life with. And to compartmentalize your life to the degree that you alienate the person who lays on the pillow beside you doesn't make sense to me. You know, I see so many people do that. And, you know, I'm oftentimes, when I'm leaving the office, I'm rushing home. And some of my coworkers are like, oh, well, come out for a drink with us. And I'm like, nah, I'm good. I don't need to go. You know, if I wanted to indulge in alcohol, you know, which I'm not a big drinker, but if I wanted to indulge in alcohol, I could stop and get some wine or some beer and go home and drink it or invite some folks over to drink it. But I'm not going to go spend money in a bar and so forth when I have a house. And they're like, oh, no, are you going for the social thing? And I'm like, well, you know what? I'm going home because I enjoy being with my wife. And they'll say things like, oh, you're whipped. And I'm like, listen, I'm not a child. You know, you're not going to peer pressure me into sabotaging my relationship, which is what a lot of folks do. They allow their relationship to become sabotaged by individuals who tell them things like, you know, you should come out and hang out and all this other stuff. One of the things that I remember from my single days is that when I was single, the one thing I wanted was to not be single. So all those folks who are single, I mean, I don't look down on them, but I recognize that many of them who may pretend that they're living the life of Riley, many of them want what I have, and I'm not going to lose it.
Yes, sir. That's definitely true. And we also have to remember that as far as taking advice from people, because relationships are not theoretical. We don't accept advice from someone who thinks they know how it is, but they've had no practical application. They may be offended, but it's true. If you have no history of being in some kind of long-term positive relationship, then you probably just don't get it. Part of being a mature adult is that your family comes first, you know, your spouse, your children. That's where the focus is. It's not productive. Once you have a stable family and a healthy family, you have far less need to go outside and hang with this person or that person. You know, you can have them come over to your house. That's what we do a lot. We rarely go outside to entertain. If somebody wants to see one of us, they'll have to come over to the house. I'll have a meal prepared. You know, they can sit down and watch some TV or play a video game or whatever they want to do. But there's no reason to really leave the house when you have a good home environment. Why would you want to? What's better out there? That's the thing they don't get. They think that, you know, it's better at a club or better at a bar. It's not better. It's really not better.
I would definitely agree. And, you know, everyone who listens to this show knows that I spent nearly 2.5 decades in the entertainment industry, running all over the world, living a very reckless lifestyle. And at the point that I'm at now, at this point in my life, I'm so glad to just be able to have a home to come home to that I actually enjoy. Because I have a lot of friends who are still in the entertainment industry, and many of them have these really nice houses that are decorated with all these elaborate decorations and so forth. But most of them spend no time in their house. They're always in a club. They're always hanging out. And most of that is because home is not home for them. And it is important that home be home. And I think that when people are single, you have to look at the value that people place on their home life. You know, if a person is always in a club or always hanging out, you need to ask yourself, what are they running from? And why don't they value the time that they can spend with themselves? And I didn't realize, you know, I spent so much time hanging out in the crowd because I really didn't like me. And that was a really hard thing to deal with. But once I came to the realization that I didn't like me, so how dare I expect or assume that someone else would like me and I didn't like me? No.
That's very true, and I see that a lot. I have some associates who were single, and I actually had to let them go because it was constantly, you know, you don't go out, you know, what kind of life do you have? You're always in the house. And no matter what, I just couldn't make them understand, you know, why that was, because they hadn't experienced that. As you said, a lot of times we're running from ourselves and we don't realize it. And that's why before we can make any changes, we have to get in touch with ourselves. We have to like ourselves. We have to learn to love ourselves again. And a lot of us don't. It's hard to. I mean, we grow up, men and women, in this society who teaches us that we're second-class citizens. We have no history. We have no value or worth. We're going to grow up to be nothing. The women will be prostitutes, and the men will be lucky if they live after the age of 25. I remember when I was coming up, I saw that all the time, you know. The men, black men die before they're even 25 years old. How are you supposed to love yourself? You know, and so that's why it's so important to take that time out before you try to get into a relationship and beg somebody else to love you. You have to find your own value. You know, we have to start dressing in a respectable way. A lot of women wonder, you know, why all the men they meet are quote-unquote dogs. Well, if you are trying to catch somebody by showing them some fresh meat, you're going to attract that kind of man. All the strays in the neighborhood are going to come smelling around looking for that fresh meat. Cover yourself up. Respect yourself, learn to smile, learn to talk, learn to be respectful of other people, and learn to respect yourself. Once we do that, we'll be on to something.
You know, one of the things that I wanted to talk about is, how do you feel about friends of the opposite gender? You know, like I've heard some people say that men and women can't be friends. What is your take on that?
I think that you have to proceed with caution, but I think that that's something that you need to discuss with your spouse at the beginning of the relationship when you're in that courtship process. How do you feel about friends of the opposite sex? Do you have any friends of the opposite sex? How will those relationships change, you know, once we're together? Those are the kind of things that you have to agree on, because every situation is different. There was a time when I thought that men and women absolutely could not be friends, because every male that I tried to have as a friend wanted something besides that. It always came out sooner or later. But after a while, I matured a little bit, changed my, you know, the people that I was around, and I met a different caliber of man. So I do have men now. They're comrades and associates who I'll talk to from time to time, but it's not like a girlfriend type of thing where we're just sitting on the phone for hours at a time. They're brothers who my husband knows well. He knows exactly who they are. Usually when I'm talking to them, it's related to some kind of pro-black thing, and he's sitting right there listening. I might have him on speakerphone or may not, you know, but he's right there, And he knows what's going on, and he doesn't have a problem with that because he knows that we're talking about business and we're working on different projects. Now, if he had a problem with that, I would not do that because, again, the relationship comes first, and there's nobody on this earth that I'm going to, you know, risk a relationship for. And not just that, but also respecting my husband enough to not want to give him a reason to feel insecure in any way. Those are the kind of things when you're in a positive relationship you do. You worry about the other person's feelings. It's not all about you. So I think it is possible to a certain extent. I'd say don't overdo it. Like I said, you don't want to be talking to them all the time. You certainly don't want to be comparing your spouse to that person. That's a good way to kill a relationship. But it's possible. It's possible, but you have to be sure that you're being respectful with it and that it's okay with your partner. If your partner has a problem with it, don't do it.
Yeah, I would agree. For me, you know, when I was younger, I didn't think that men and women could be real friends. I used to think, you know, it was just a result of someone being stuck in a friend zone, and it was just a matter of, you know, waiting for an opportunity to present itself for them to get out of that friend zone. But as I got older and I matured more, I've come to realize that for me, and I can't speak for anyone else, I wouldn't desire to be with a person who doesn't know how to be friends with the opposite sex, because that's very telling about that individual's character. You know, like, I mean, why do you have difficulty of being around men and there not be more to it other than, you know, you're just friends? And I don't mean that they have to be your friend to the degree that your female friends are your friends, where, you know, you're comfortable enough undressing in front of them and all that. I'm talking about appropriate situations in terms of, you know, you and this individual are, you know, engaged in a way in which the individual is being respectful of you and you're being respectful of them, and, you know, you're not crossing those boundaries. So that's just very important to me. Since we have so many callers that are on the switchboard, and I know a number of you who are on the switchboard had your hands up when we did go to the after stream, I wanted to give anyone on the switchboard who may have a question or a comment, may have wanted to weigh in, I want to give each of you an opportunity to weigh in. So I'm just going to go down the line and read off the first three digits of your phone number. And if you have a question or a comment, you can chime in. And if not, just say you're just listening and put your phone back on mute. So we're going to start with area code 317. Did you have a question or comment, something you wanted to weigh in with?
No, this is Lori. I was just listening, and I think that the conversation is flowing very positively. I'm very proud of both of you for even wanting to put on something like this. It's very informative.
Okay, well, thank you. We appreciate it. We appreciate that. Appreciate that a great deal. All right. Caller from the 770 area code. Did you have a question or comment? Guess not. Okay. So we're going to move on to caller from the 678. Did you have a question or comment? I believe that's WT in Atlanta. Okay. So we're going to move on to the next caller from 571 area code. 571 area code. Did you have a question or comment, something you wanted to weigh in with?
Hello?
Yes, ma'am. Did you have a question or comment? Something you wanted to weigh in?
Sure. Peace to everyone. I'm here listening. I want to say thank you. And it's important, everything that was discussed, but also to remember that it's happening and nobody can stop it. Nobody can stop it when the facts come together. So, peace.
Absolutely. Nothing stronger than black love.
And it is. It's royal. It's powerful. And it is happening. So amongst the books and this book I'm going to get too, so thank you for writing it. Just stay positive and know it's rising up. So peace tonight.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Okay, so we're going to move to caller from the 651. 651, that's Universal Jones. You had a question or comment?
I just have a comment. One thing that the guest spoke on earlier was dealing with the trauma and drama that each individual brings into the relationship and how that's important to address those things early on. I would say that that's extremely important if you want to have a healthy relationship, is to address your traumas. And being a black person in this area of the world, we all come with different traumas, and a lot of times we don't address those individually, so we bring that baggage into our relationships. And our abuse is extreme in our community, and it doesn't get addressed. And that gets carried over in the relationships, and it causes a lot of problems. So I thought that was a very important point. It's something that me and my wife did, and that was kind of one of the biggest reasons for me to step up to the plate and take that next step, is because we both talked about stuff that we've been through, and that able to create a bond that I never had with another female, and I don't think she ever had with another male. So good points. Instructive show. Thank you.
Yeah, that's very important, dealing with your issues. For me, I oftentimes talk about it on the show. A very pivotal movie for me was Antoine Fisher. It's probably one of my favorite movies, particularly because I like the dynamic of it showing a black male and a black female working through past issues and having a constructive outcome in the end. So I particularly love that about that particular movie. In fact, I always recommend to couples who are considering dating in their early stages, I always tell them they should watch the movie Antoine Fisher, because I think that there are some really good points in that particular movie. You know, I like the point where he does this poem. He talks about he was a little boy and no one cried for him. And I relate to it a lot. I'm going to share it with you now.
Who will cry for the little boy lost and all alone? Who will cry for the little boy abandoned without his own? Who will cry for the little boy he cried himself to sleep? Who will cry for the little boy who he never had for keeps? Who will cry for the little boy who walked the burning stair? Who will cry for the little boy, the boy inside the man? Who will cry for the little boy who knew well hurt and pain? Who will cry for the little boy who died and died again? Who will cry for the little boy? A good boy he tried to be. Who will cry for the little boy who cries inside of me?
And I thought that was a very powerful point in the movie. You know, a lot of men or people who are adults, black males, have never cried for that little boy inside of them. And I always encourage brothers, you know, it's not enough to just put on the OJ's last night me and my woman, we cried together. That's cool and all of that, but you've got to deal with your issues, whatever your issues are. And many of us as black men have faced some very terrible things. There are a lot of brothers who I speak to regularly, many of them who have been incarcerated. And as a result of being incarcerated, many of them have been brutalized. Many of these men have been sexually assaulted by other male prisoners. And they come home from that inhumane condition, and they attempt to get into relationships with women and try to prove that that situation didn't have an impact on them. And because they don't deal with it, a lot of these brothers go out and do some really counterproductive and destructive things. And, you know, those brothers need to deal with that. There are lots of brothers who have been molested when they were children, and many of them haven't dealt with or addressed any of that, and they begin acting out with sexualized aggression, being promiscuous towards women, and don't realize what the basis of a lot of that sexualized aggression is towards women. And there are, just as there are lots of women who have been molested or raped or experienced an abortion or a pregnancy that didn't go full term, all sorts of trauma or domestic violence, and they haven't dealt with that abuse. And then when they attempt to get into a relationship and you don't address those issues and you're not able to be open and honest with your partner, that's just a recipe for disaster. What do you say about that, Lady Shabazz?
I think that that is a big part of our problem. It's one of the most destructive things that happens. You know, it happens, I think, to the majority of black women and to a large percentage of black men more than we would believe. And that's been occurring since our enslavement. They forced that upon us. You know, white men had some very disgusting and perverted lusts that they took out on us. Also, when they were trying to breed us to get more slaves, they had us do horrible things. You know, incest, sex with children, homosexuality, all that comes from that period in our history. And unfortunately, that's part of our history that we haven't been able to work out yet because we don't like to talk about it. And so it continues from generation to generation, and we don't do anything to stop it. That's why when the brother called in and said, what can I do to, you know, kind of keep my daughter away from that kind of mentality, protect her. Make sure that this does not happen to her. Take it seriously. Know that it is a threat. Watch your sons. Watch your daughters. Cherish your children. We have to start dealing with this. We have to not let this continue to be a part of our history, because that's something that you can move on from. Definitely, that's something that you can heal from, but that's something that once it happens to you, you're never the same person. And we don't have the time that we need right now as a race of people to have people having to heal from that. We have too many other things that we need to do than to wait 20, 30, 40, or 50 years for somebody to heal from that before they can be a productive person. We need to eliminate that altogether, and we'll be able to move a lot faster in the direction we need to go.
I agree. I wanted to share with some folks the chapters of the book. It's 13 chapters, and chapter 1 is The Life of a Man. Chapter 2 is Home is His Refuge. And chapter 3 is Words Have Power. Chapter 4 talks about cooperation. Chapter 5, Nourishing Your Man. Chapter 6, Sensual Healing. Chapter 7, Nourishing His Seeds. Chapter 8, Healing the Family. Chapter 9, Divine Beauty. Chapter 10, Do Good Men Cheat? Chapter 11, If You Can't Get Along in Peace, chapter 12 is the review and chapter 13 is the conclusion. Of all the chapters that you wrote, what is the chapter that is most near and dear to you?
Wow. That's a really hard question because I think that they are all essential. I would have to say probably either the one on communication or cooperation, and really they work hand in hand. We do so much destruction in our relationships by how we talk that we as Black women really need to learn how to control our tongues. It'll help a lot. And our attitudes. Like I keep saying, we have to cooperate. We can't always be in competition. And men need some help in this area as well. But women, we can be so vicious with each other, with our men, with our children. When we get that together, we'll be a lot better off. So I would say one of those two chapters.
Nothing.
Did you get my paper, Elise?
We're picking up some background noise.
I guess you did.
One of the callers
on the
line.
Do you think that you can pay
that bill by? Oh, yes, that's right.
We're hearing about your bill.
I'm going to pay that. I'm probably going to pay that.
I think I muted up. Yeah. Okay. But I we're hearing some background noise, so I apologize for that.
Yes, sir. Were you able to hear my response?
Yes, ma'am, I was.
Okay, yes, sir.
So what are some of the things that you have coming up?
Some of the things that I have coming up. Well, I'm actually working on two books right now. We'll see which one gets released first. The first is called Conscious Entertaining. And it deals with some things we were talking about earlier, actually, how to entertain at home and do so in a meaningful manner where you're actually getting something out of it and it feeds the soul and the African spirit. That one is near completion. And I recently started working on a cookbook, which is kind of a journal for people who want to start eating healthy, maybe transitioning to a plant-based diet, but don't really know how to do it, or what kind of foods they'd be eating, how they can avoid just eating a bunch of tofu and weird stuff that nobody really necessarily wants to eat all the time, at least most people don't. So I'm also working on a cookbook with some good recipes from around the world that we actually would enjoy eating. I do have a program every other Tuesday on War on the Horizon that usually, all ranges of topics on that. And let's see, I have a blog, messagetotheblackfam.com. It's message, the number 2, theblackfam.com, that has recipes and little tidbits of advice. It's kind of like a blog form of the book. I go into more detail in the book, but you can pick up some good things on the blog, too, for free.
Okay, that's what I like. It sounds like you're staying productive, that's very, very important. So, one of the things that I most appreciate about the book is the cover. Tell us a little bit about the cover. What went into the designing of the book and the cover, that image?
Well, I was really, really lucky. I met a local designer here in Detroit, Michigan. He's a lecturer. He does really, really great lectures. He's actually going to, he's scheduled to be on my program this upcoming Tuesday. His name is Keith Young. And we were going back and forth about what would be a good book cover. And he sent me some things, and they were really, really good, but I just wasn't happy with the cover image. So I wanted a picture that would really depict the book, a Black man, a straight Black man, and a Black woman in love. And so we got that picture for the book, and it just really resonated with me because you can see that he's just happy to have this woman. She's like bending down, ready to kiss him, and he's just overjoyed. And that's the kind of spirit that we should have in the home, that kind of innocence that we used to have. And I don't know where it went, but we're going to bring it back. We're going to be okay.
Absolutely. That's very important. anyone who listens to this show knows that I go hard for Black Love. I don't want to talk about or have any discussion about any other sort of situation. I mean, when folks want to talk to me about all those other couplings, my perspective is there are enough people that are involved in that sort of stuff to talk about that. And I'm not qualified to talk about so-called interracial relationships or, you know, same gender relationships. I'm not qualified to talk about that because that's not an interest or focus of mine. So my interest and focus is a Black man loving a Black woman, loving Black children. So I think that a lot of us, we need to stop expending so much of our energy focusing on those other things, because one thing that I notice is that, and when I say expending energy, I mean don't ignore other situations that are adverse to what your personal life philosophy is, but I think that we do a lot of promoting of a lot of those other things. And I think that, you know, for younger people who are looking at Black couples, if you only hear Black couples complaining about other individuals who they don't agree with or for whatever reason, it makes the younger child who's impressionable to say, well, why aren't these people enjoying themselves and enjoying their relationship and showing me a positive aspect of their relationship? They're spending so much time focused on these other folks that, hey, maybe I need to look at those other folks. So I think that we're doing a really bad job in terms of our marketing. We need to be better marketers as couples that, you know, desire, you know, young people to want to be in relationships, you know. What do you think of that?
Oh, I think that that's absolutely correct. You know, we definitely like to sit around and complain about things, but we don't put in the work a lot of times to make those changes that are needed. A marriage is what you make it. People always ask me, you know, well, how's marriage? How is it? It's what you make it. And if you put effort into it, it'll be great. If you let it die, then no, you're not going to enjoy it. It's like a plant. You have to water it. You have to nurture it. And as long as you're mature enough to put your relationship first, do what it takes to keep it going, you'll be fine. But a lot of us aren't willing to do that. We don't choose a spouse appropriately. We just get with the first person that we see because we're desperate. And then once we get with that person, we let ourselves go. We make no effort. We don't respect them. We don't treat them kindly at all. We treat them like our enemy, and then we wonder why they become our enemy. We sabotage ourselves. And, yeah, that's a really bad look, but it doesn't have to be that way. We can do something different. We just have to choose to, and we have to be willing to not be lazy and be willing to do whatever it takes. And it really doesn't take a lot. It's just basic human kindness and respect.
Well, I agree. You know, I think that we place so much emphasis on materialism that we've lost sight of the fact that it doesn't cost you anything to be courteous and respectful towards one another. Just to be able to say please or thank you or I appreciate you. And, you know, if you change your language in a way in which you interact with other people, you're going to begin to see a difference in your environment. One of the things that I think about is, for instance, the lotus flower. Everyone always talks about how beautiful a lotus flower is when they see it on top of the water of a pond or something. But people don't realize what that lotus flower had to go through to be that lotus. The lotus flower, when it's a seed and so forth, and during its growth process, when it's under the water, it's surrounded by filth and under the worst conditions. and part of its cultivation process is it takes in everything around it that's filthy, and it purifies it, and it pushes this waste away from itself, and then it makes its way to the top of that pond, and when it gets to the top of that pond, it basks in the sunlight in all its glory. And when that sun goes down, it flips over. And then when it comes back up, it flips up. And people don't realize that as black people, oftentimes many of us are surrounded in some of the worst possible conditions, neighborhoods and so forth, family members. Many of our family members are sick. And we don't like to acknowledge that they're sick. But we have to acknowledge that they're sick. It's just like pink eye. You know, the pink eye is very highly contagious. And when you're around a person who has pink eye, they can spread it to you very easily. And I say that a lot of us are afflicted with the disease of negativity. You know, where we have to be in this negative mode as a result of embracing the nigger mindset. And we don't like to say, I know I don't identify myself as a nigger, and we don't like to acknowledge that niggers are real, but that's a reality. But niggers aren't born, niggers are bred. And that is a mentality that is bred into individuals, and oftentimes we breed it into ourselves because we haven't recognized how negative and unhealthy we are as individuals. But it's really about just standing in front of that mirror and looking at yourself wherever you are and realizing that you want to make some changes in your life, whoever you are, wherever you are. It's a process. But you're never going to be able to have another person love you if you don't love you. And it's nothing worse. You know, you talk about God's gift. And my grandmother always talks about a gift out of season can become a curse. And there's nothing worse than being with the perfect person and you're the imperfect you. You know, you're like, wow. She is so great. But when is she going to find out I'm not all that I could or should be? Well, he is such a good dude. But when is he going to realize that I haven't done all the work necessary to be the best person that I could be? And then that insecurity comes about, and the next thing you know, you're self-sabotaging that relationship. So I just want to remind folks who listen to this show that this show is not about beating you up. This show is about being open and honest about whoever you are, wherever you are, and loving life, and recognizing that you, just like me, just like anyone else who's chimed in on this call, we have work to do, and we can get it done wherever we are. But first and foremost, you got to start where you are. And, you know, I have an acronym that I oftentimes use in my workshops, seminars, which is RAP, Responsibility, Accountability, and Productivity. You got to take responsibility for what's going on in your life, what you've allowed to happen in your life. You've got to embrace accountability, recognizing that the power exists within you and you yourself to change whatever those circumstances are, and then you've got to demonstrate productivity by putting those words and that plan into practice on a day-to-day basis. So that's what it is. So but in closing, we want to thank you for joining us this evening for what was a great conversation. We want to encourage folks to purchase the book. The book is God's Gift, How to Be a Good Black Woman to a Strong Black Man. Once again, God's Gift, How to Be a Good Black Woman to a Strong Black Man. The author's name is Angela Freeman, a.k.a. Lady Shabazz. You can purchase it on Amazon in the ebook format right now. Click buy. Read the reviews for those of you who have purchased the book. Or when you do purchase the book, we ask and encourage you to leave a review so that others can know what your opinion of the book was on Amazon.com, and spread it around to other folks. And, you know, for those of you who have friends and family members who desire a Black Love experience, we encourage you to point them to find out this particular book, this material, or share this show with them. And I hope that it inspires them, wherever they are in love and life, to make the necessary changes that they need to make to become the Black man and the Black woman that each of us is destined to be. So before we close out, I want you to have the final word. Is there anything you want to leave the folks with?
Well, I would like to give a thanks to a few people, my brother Turner, my brother's United Front, who are a conscious rap group, very talented, and my brother Irritated Genie. Those are all brothers who helped me go through the book and edit and make sure that it was a high quality and that I wasn't saying anything too crazy or anything like that. Without them, the book would not have been possible in its current format, so I do thank them. I thank you for being kind enough to allow me to come on your program. I definitely appreciate that. And to the audience, you know, just don't give up. I get so tired of hearing there's no good Black women, there's no good Black men. There's both. You know, we just have to deal with a few things, iron out a few little wrinkles, and we will be okay. We're going to get this.
Absolutely. And how can folks stay in touch with you and tell them about your show?
Oh, definitely. Every other Tuesday from 7 to 9 Eastern Time, I appear on War on the Horizon radio station. You know, they can call in by phone, similar to here, or they can just listen online. As I said, the Message to the Black Fam blog, I'm available on there or on Facebook. If you look up Angela Freeman, it may even pop up under Lady Shabazz, but I'm on there as well. Feel free to shoot me a message or friend me, whatever you want to do. I'm definitely, you know, an open person, so feel free to reach out.
Absolutely, and we want to thank you again for being part of the show. Just thank you so much for the work that you're doing to contribute to saving the Black family. I mean, it's about each and every one of us doing our part. So we definitely appreciate and support your efforts and all that you're doing to, you know, do your part towards rebuilding and sustaining the Black family. So we thank you for all you do.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay, family, once again, it's your man, S-Doc. You know you can reach out to me via email, thes.files@gmail.com. Once again, thes.files@gmail.com. That's thesdotfiles@gmail.com. You can friend me on Facebook or follow me on Twitter, just /thes.files. Until next time, thank you for joining us on the Black Love Experience. It's your man, S-Dot. Black Love.
I want to sing this song, but do y'all mind if I put a little soul in it? Let me talk to you about Black love. Let me give you my definition of Black love.
It's the kind of love between a newbie and a king and a newbie and a queen. It's special and so supreme. It's the kind of love between a mother and a daughter, father and a son. Identify and join as one. Have love for your people, cause they're a part of you,
a part of you.
And black on black crime, it ain't the thing to do. You gotta reach out for those that are lost and hold on to your identity at any cost. I'm talking about black love. Inside you find the least little bit of hate. Throw it away and change your heart. Have love for yourself, cause that's where it starts. And then reach out to your sister and your brother. It's a beautiful thing.
I know you're out there. I can feel you now. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. I'm going to show them a world without you. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.